Hello and welcome to another episode of Into the Labyrinth. Today we're going to explore, or plan to explore, how stories influence our perceptions, our decisions, our identities, and kind of the interplay of that. So yeah, let's enter the labyrinth. So I've been fixating on this idea of narratives again. I watched this film starring Margot Robbie and Brad Pitt called Babylon, which in this episode isn't necessarily about this movie. It's more so what it reminded me of. But it's about early Hollywood and when silent films began transitioning into talking films. Now, I don't really want to spoil too much of it. There's going to be minor spoilers, so if you want to, just pause it and go watch the movie. And also, the film is just okay, so I also don't want this to be like a recommendation of the film necessarily. It doesn't do anything groundbreaking. However, it did make me think, so it did do something I enjoy. So it did something helpful, I suppose. I mean, it made me think about narratives, right? And kind of like these narratives that you kind of witness within the characters, especially when it's like a film about Hollywood. I found that interesting. But anyway, it's how these like narratives that we build for ourselves and we see in movies, how they become our masks, right? That we cannot, you know, we can't always like take off that mask that we create for ourselves. We become consumed by our mask. You know, the masks we wear become us. And in this film, these early Hollywood people are wearing these masks. It's almost like I could like feel it. I could see it, right? These personalities, the personality being the mask, that are built out of ideas and narratives that are being influenced onto people, the characters. And I'm talking about like the characters, not like the people playing the characters, but the characters in the story. And once those masks, those narratives and ideas become you, they become validated by, say, success, such as becoming a movie star. I think it's then hard to be anything else. We become attached to that mask because it's the way we position ourselves in the world. So you become consumed by the narrative that you have for yourself. Now, like I said, there's going to be a minor spoiler here. So fast forward if you don't want to hear this part. I would say like fast forward like 45 seconds. But anyway, this character in the film, she has this choice at one point, a potential escape, a way out, but she doesn't take it. And we all know, like we're watching this. We all know, if anyone like watches the film, we all know she wasn't going to take it. It's kind of obvious. It's like this narrative trope, but it's not necessarily a bad narrative trope. It's just something that you just see this like integral part of this character, this stereotype that's played out, but still a part of them. She couldn't take the way out because she had been consumed by a narrative, a mask that had become her, a narrative that had become her, this destructive narrative, an idea that had become her. Anyway, like I said, average movie, but Margot Robbie's in it, so I was pretty much guaranteed to watch it and at least enjoy it somewhat, right? But anyway, this narrative idea also connected with this recent piece I read on Aeon. And I think it connects with this idea of narratives well. It made me kind of connect these two things. And this idea that narratives we hold become the things that drive us. I've talked about this before, right? They drive how we perceive the world, what we believe about ourselves. You know, it's this endless loop of perception, right? We become warped by it. We become warped and influenced by external beliefs, yada, yada, yada. All this stuff, right? Now, narratives influence how we view information as well. Like a conventional narrative, let's say, that we have about human history or the history of life on this planet is that Earth's history is a series of, let's say, dominant species or dynasties taking turns in ruling the planet. That's like the narrative we believe about it. That's why we get obsessed with like extinction events, because we see like a new dominant species come up. And we also see ourselves as the dominant species right now. But think about dinosaurs. We always talk about that asteroid hitting the Earth 66 million years ago and then proclaim how that led the way for the next great age, the age of mammals, and then it became us and blah, blah, blah. Now we have skyscrapers everywhere and now we, you know, listen to things in our earbuds from somewhere, from someone somewhere all across the world, right? But in reality, this like power shift idea of someone being on top kind of distorts or simplifies or takes away the nuance of what truly happened. You know, viewing such events as mere power shifts between dominant species is a distortion. This perspective is influenced by, let's say, our human tendency to see ourselves as the current dominant species, drawing parallels between, you know, past extensions and potential threats to our own dominance, because we view ourselves as dominant. That's the narrative. But life on Earth is more about interconnected communities than individual dominant species. It's like these interconnected communities and ecosystems are what prop up various species. Not necessarily make them dominant, but prop up. They're still reliant upon the interplay and interconnected web of other parts of the ecosystem. For instance, like take the example of like the T-Rex, often seen as like this grand symbol of dinosaur dominance. But that T-Rex was part of a complex ecosystem and depended on other species for survival. You know, it needed that interconnected ecosystem. It needed to be part of that in order to survive. So the real story of Earth's history is about how entire communities that relied on each other, whether they knew it or not, that's not the point, is not about knowing it. It's just like the plants the certain creatures eat, and how those plants might rely on that creature eating it to then, you know, create more plants, and that whole like interplay. But how entire communities adapt and evolve in response to challenges. It's not just about which species is on top and then seeing when they inevitably fall, you know. Instead of like, my point, I guess, of saying this story is, instead of focusing on an individual star species, for example, that supposedly like ruled the Earth at different times, the emphasis is or should be on entire ecosystems, the interconnected interplay of those ecosystems. Every species, no matter how seemingly insignificant, plays a role in the health and the function of its ecosystem. It relies on each other. It's not like it's this hierarchical structure. It's this grand landscape and web of interplay that everything plays an important role. Everything has a role, no matter how small. Just, we often create a narrative of what is small or what is important, all that type of shit, right? We'll get into that. But my point is, we want to imagine ourselves as this like central hub of history, as this central narrative, but that itself is a narrative, the narrative of dominance. And now, the reason I bring this up and bring it up about nature, think about how this narrative creates an us versus them mentality and how that could have like a trickle-down effect. We follow this narrative and we believe in this need for dominance. So we begin imagining threats, creating narratives about threats. Okay? So keep that in your mind. So my point is that we pull from the external world to formulate our own narratives individually. And I'm not saying that we do in as a community. And I'm not saying that we have some cohesive narrative either, as our, you know, very memories are often fragmented. You know, we fill in the gaps of those fragments and proclaim meanings from them. But I often wonder about this and wonder how much we avoid paying mind to a sense of knowing, and knowing that these narratives are not cohesive and are not cleanly together. They're contradictory. And that contradictoryness, I guess you could say, of them is what often leads to conflict. You know, it's the meshing of the narratives where the narrative no longer feels cohesive, and that's when the conflict occurs. You know, that's what religious wars were fought over, right? A disagreement about something like God. Countries wage wars about this, about, you know, the lines on these imaginary lines on maps, on borders. We wage wars over that. These narratives we have about those things, the conflict we then wish to resolve, right? Unless our narrative becomes the conflict, then you kind of need that, I suppose. And cultures have that too. Cultures have narratives on like the importance of that conflict, of that war, of that dominance. So then they seek that out. We see that in history as well, right? It's just an interesting thing. And films and books and old stories, they often follow that structure of a cohesive narrative as well. The symbol of a cohesive narrative, right? We can then project that into our own lives. You know, like I said, I brought up the film Babylon, right? It provides a narrative. But in that narrative, you see the narrative of the characters and the narratives that those characters hold. They see themselves as playing a part in life, playing a character. They become attached to the character. They've played a part in creating for themselves, and society itself played a part in creating that character. It's just this constant interplay. So my point is, we're always creating a narrative in tandem with everything around us, with ourselves, the people we love, the communities we are in, what we consume. Your narrative is never your own. You're playing in an act of, you're acting in an interplay with everything around you, always, constantly. It's unavoidable, you know? And you could probably become, I think, most aware of this in relationships. You know, I think, or maybe this is just me, in those like intimate relationships, we can imagine and see kind of this interplay of influences and how we like created a narrative for our relationship with someone else. Okay. So think of like a time that you were in love with someone, or maybe you are in love with someone still, right? We know or believe that love isn't some like fleeting emotion, right? We see it as a powerful one. And we know that when we are in love with someone, or maybe have a former lover, right? You might look back on the memories you have with them. You see various actions or moments in that relationship as moments that had significance in some broader narrative you have about the relationship, you know? And maybe those significant moments are turning points. Say you realize you love them. You realize you want to spend your life with them. You realize you've never felt this way before. You realize you've never cared for someone like this before. The list can go on and on and on, right? And the same could be said on the flip side, these like pivot points. You know, you might remember moments or arguments maybe that were turning points, where disagreements unfolded, where you realize like, fuck, like this is never going to work with them. It's a pivot point that forced you to reevaluate. It's this interplay unfolding, a pivot point in the web of a relationship that you are building in tandem with another person. And that pivot point makes you shift and to reevaluate it. So let's go broader. Our perception of love is also shaped by cultural narratives, you know, many of which come from popular culture, like the Romeo and Juliet trope or the Disney princess trope. These cultural tales, combined with our personal experiences, mold our unique interpretations of what a relationship with someone else should look like. It's not set in stone, I guess, is a point of this. And when narratives between two people collapses, they either discuss and communicate to get that narrative back on track, or they simply, let's say, split up. That's where breakups occur. And I don't think we should dismiss how much we care about the external perceptions from the world, even about your relationship with someone, you know. I think we love to imagine that we, you know, don't care about others' perceptions about a relationship or our significant other. But I think we all know how much the external influences our perceptions. So from that, we inevitably desire some validation from the external world, thus caring about how the world perceives your relationship will matter to you, because we need that validation to validate what we are feeling and that narrative we have. Everything else plays a role in that. And I'm not saying this is like a good or bad thing either. That's not the point. But I do find it interesting, right? I suppose I find this important to be aware of as well. I mean, think about the pivot points you have in life, be it a tragedy or simply an awareness of the influence narratives may have on you. When we come into this realization, we begin to desire to reposition ourselves into a new narrative. We are forced to try to make sense of our new understanding. Maybe it's like an intense emotion or whatever else it is. My point is, it's like we have this like uncertain interplay we constantly have with the external world of a curiosity or an uncertainty about what the external world means for us and our position in it. So we filter that into and through our internal perception of ourselves. We continuously evolve and transform our narrative of ourselves based on what we take from the external world. And that's how we kind of navigate our place in it. I mean, fuck, like stories, they can cause this to happen as well. It's like stories that we hear. We imagine events in our lives as moments in a story where we think, okay, now I must reposition myself. I must feel this. I must make meaning of it. This is a pivot point for me. This is how myths work for us, or narratives. They act as symbols that drive us. I mean, like, imagine how you present yourself online, for example. This is an example of doing this. I do this as well, where our digital personas might be rooted in our real-world experiences or beliefs and values, yet they are still often embellished, curated, or even entirely reinvented versions of ourselves. You know, even like imagine the move towards like authenticity where people are trying to like say, look at me, I'm sharing my raw moment in those internet spaces. It's still inevitably still a curated image or symbol of something else, something imagined. This curated identity becomes a symbol representing not just who we are, but also who we aspire to be or how we perceive ourselves. And we're seeking something from the external world of what we believe we ought to be. That's what stories do for us too. They become symbols, like films do, books do this. They become symbols that are meant to represent something that resonates with us. And these symbols are all like, they're always in flux. They're always evolving and growing, but we all share in the influence of these narratives. So I guess my point of all this is narratives, whether they're rooted in literature, biology, or the digital realm, they are more than just stories. They are blueprints of our existence in some sense. They shape our perceptions, influence our decisions, and define our identities. In a world that's becoming increasingly interconnected and complex, understanding the power and implications of narratives is crucial. It allows us to navigate the challenges of the modern age, from the intricacies of online interactions to the complexities of human relationships. You know, by recognizing the significance of narratives, yeah, I think it can help us, you know, foster new understandings, empathy, promote understandings, and bridge gaps that we perceive as dividing us. You know, in essence, narratives remind us that despite our perceived differences, there's a larger story constantly unfolding, intricately, nuanced, complex, but still shared. We all share in it. You know, we all share experiences, memories, emotions, aspirations, dreams, desires, drives. That's the shit we can't avoid. That's the shit that's fucking human. But yeah, that's enough for today. It's time for you to get the fuck out of my labyrinth. Peace.